everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. We're coming at you live from Hoss Tools headquarters here in Norman Park, Georgia. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're excited to have you with us today. We've got a really good show planned for you. Going to have a little show and tell, a little tool of the week. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some equipment this week, talk about tillers.
Mm-hmm.
And
cucumbers, raw cucumbers, put a little seasoning salt on. It's a great snack.
Now, we obviously, this show is not scripted in any way, but we do have production meetings. In our production meeting, I thought we had a talk about you eating on the show.
Well, I mean, it's a little snacky. Nothing wrong with that. It's always a good, healthy snack.
So we can just pretty much expect you to eat on the show.
Sometimes.
Okay.
Well, I was going to eat this squash, and this is a Tempest squash that you brought for me. So I had it on the counter up there, and our office dog, the one we call Tank, throw a picture up there, Tank. We got a picture of Tank here.
Yeah.
We want to show everybody. Well, Tank got a hold of my squash there up off the counter and ate my squash, gnawed on it pretty good. So I decided I'd just eat me a cucumber. Now, Tank is a stray that showed up here not too long ago, and Tank's a big old dog.
Mm-hmm.
He's still in the puppy stage. And the other day, Tank got a whole jelly tater off of my desk and ate the whole thing, a raw potato. Then I went in there and I found him, and he had got a cucumber, a whole cucumber, off the table and eat the whole cucumber.
And then about to eat a whole squash.
So we got a dog that loves vegetables too.
Raw produce is his thing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about these squash here a little bit, using this mangled one here as an example. So where we are in South Georgia, with our humidity this time of year, really ain't supposed to be able to grow squash.
It can be tough.
But I got some Tempest, these right here, and I got some Patty Pan coming along. And they are actually looking really healthy and doing pretty good considering the time of year it is. Now, I have had to baby them. I'm talking about baby them. And if you watch our two-minute tip that's coming next week, next Tuesday, I'll show you those squash and show you some things I've been doing to keep the squash bugs down, because this is the time of year when they're usually at their highest concentration. And then we've been also having lots and lots of rain. It's been wet, and we've been alternating using this Liquicop here fungicide, which on squash and cucurbits does really well for you. Powdery mildew, your downy mildew, stuff like that. And I've been spraying a fungicide with all this rain at least twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been alternating it with this disease control here, which is an all-natural concentration of a naturally occurring bacteria. I won't try to say the name. Been rotating between these. Like I said, been babying them. There ain't a whole lot else growing in the garden besides okra and sweet potatoes, so I've had time to baby them. But seems to be working good.
Yeah, downy and powdery mildew can be detrimental to squash this time of year. And rotating these right here would help you a lot.
Yeah.
Especially with the high humidity and all the rain we have, that's ideal conditions for your mildews.
So what I like to tell people, especially this time of year when you might not have a whole lot going on in the garden, take you a chance or two on something every now and then. You know, I had some free time, took a chance on these squash, and ended up working out for me. So
same thing I did with cucumbers. Took me a little shot and planted me some late cucumbers, and we've had enough to eat on.
That's good. That's good right there. So take you a little, maybe plant you some late lettuce in spring, some late squash. Try some different things, take you a little risk here and there. So even though it's hot outside, pretty warm, kind of peak heat of the year for most people in most parts of the country, it's almost time to start thinking about our fall garden.
It is.
And to starting some plants for fall. And that brings us to our tool of the week this week, which is our heavy-duty seed trays we have here. Now, these are not like the trays you're going to find at Walmart, the flimsy throwaway ones.
Nope, you're not going to find these at your hardware store. You're not going to find them at Walmart. These are the ones that commercial guys use, and these will last you for years.
Right. You can step on them. You basically can't destroy them unless you run over them with a tractor. But you can beat them on the ground. You can spray them with a pressure washer to clean them. They have the cell shape on them there. it's kind of like a trapezoidal shape. It makes a plug that comes down to like a little cone almost. And it prevents those roots from wrapping as much. They grow straight down. It makes a really good plug.
Mm-hmm. Another thing too, the opening on the bottom is pretty good size there, so they drain well, so you don't have a lot of problems with disease, because disease can be a big issue in growing plants if you overwater too much. So if you overwater these, they're gonna drain right out. And then when you get ready to plug them, to get them out, if you have any problems, you can take something like a pencil, run up in there and pops right out.
For the most part, everything we grow in these pools right out. Some things are a little more delicate. Chard and beets can be a little more delicate, and you pop those from the bottom.
172 cell count, right?
162.
162, excuse me. Yeah.
162 cells. So you can grow a lot of plants in these. You won't ever have to replace them. These are, unlike some of the cheaper trays out there that you water from the bottom, these you water from the top. And anytime you're growing transplants, the drier you can keep them, usually the better.
Yeah, now we put ours on a wire mesh. Had somebody the other day email me saying it'd be great if we had a tray for these to sit in. Well, that kind of goes against our theory about keeping the water away from them on the disease thing. So we grow ours on a wire mesh outside so they can drain well. If you put them in a tray and have water in them, you can have some issues there.
Yeah, so we just give them just enough water. Usually drier transplants tend to have less disease and do better. So if you're thinking about starting some plants for fall, take a look at these seed trays here. We sell them in 5 packs and 10 packs, and this afternoon tomorrow afternoon I'm actually going to be starting some stuff for our Sunbelt Expo, get some stuff going.
Now rumor has it we may have some kits come out with those seed trays in May.
Maybe. So we're working on that. Maybe have some really good, some seed starting soil and some seeds and a nice soft watering wand all in one kit you can buy to get your fall stuff started.
Update on that later.
Yeah, we'll keep you updated on that later. We'll also probably have a 2-minute tip coming down the line where we talk about the best types of seed starting mix out there, because we've done a lot of testing,
a lot of research on that.
So check those seed starting trays out. I'll put a link here on the screen for those, and you can see those. So now into our main segment this week, where we're going to talk about tillers. We're going to switch it up a little bit. We don't, all of our stuff in our product line is hand or manual powered. But when you start in a new garden, or at some point, you're probably going to have to use a tiller in your garden.
A tiller has its place in the garden. The problem we see is most people overuse it. And when I talk about these mistakes today, I'm going to give you firsthand experience, because I've made some mistakes with this and learned firsthand how you can have problems using a tiller. Now, a tiller is ideal when you need to get rid of some plant material, need to break it up, get it into the soil, or you're mixing in some compost, or you're breaking it up for the first time. The biggest problem we see, and the biggest problem I have had in the past, is overusing a tiller, and it can be detrimental to your soil system in your garden.
Yeah, so let's talk about when to use a tiller, maybe when not to use a tiller. And I don't, I probably find myself using mine 3 or 4 times a year. Depending on your situation, other people might use them more frequently. I try to only use it when it's really completely necessary. And one of the main reasons by that is by time. That wheel hoe for a smaller garden is a lot quicker than getting that tiller going. So when not to use a tiller? One of the main things we see is people that will till their garden and then an hour later want to go out there and plant in it. And what happens when you till it and get it all fluffy is you create all these air pockets in there. And believe it or not, that's going to decrease your germination some, because you're not getting optimal seed to soil contact.
Yeah, anytime you have a firm seed bed, you get a lot better germination. Now you can do that with a roller, as you know, you can wait till you get a rain on there. But the ideal way to plant is to plant and roll, or have that seed bed compacted so that you get soil contact on all sides, all the surface area of that seed, and your germination rate is going to be a lot better that way than it is just planting in some freshly tilled soil.
Right. So if you need to till your soil before you plant in spring, do it a few weeks before you plant. Let it settle down and compact, and your germination will be a lot better. Mm-hmm. Other times we don't want to use a tiller when weeds have seeded out. We don't want to bury those weed seeds because they can stay dormant down there in the soil and come back and haunt us later.
Yeah. Another thing too is feeder roots. A lot of times people use a tiller as a cultivating tool. Now, I've been guilty of myself this before. What happens is you get lazy sometimes. You say, well, I just run that tiller through my middles out there and be done with this thing in just a little bit. Well, that is the exact wrong way, textbook wrong way to use a tiller. Tiller is not a cultivating tool, and there's several reasons why. You're going to get in there close to the plant, and you're going to tear up those feeder roots that are on top of the soil.
And a lot of those are more microscopic. You can't see them with the naked eye, but they're there.
And corn is an ideal example of that. You don't want to get in there and get close to corn with your tiller to cultivate. Another thing, too, is a tiller can mess up the tilth of your soil. Now, the tilth of your soil is the consistency of, and soil is a living organism. So we got to think about it in that context there. If you beat it to death with that tiller, then you're going to kill that soil. I've done this. I've seen it firsthand. I've had friends that do this also. What happens is you beat it so much that you just kind of pick it up and your soil just flows through your hand like sand or like sugar. It has no consistency, or the ideal word there is tilth to it. Now, when you pick up good, healthy soil, it should kind of crumble away.
You also kind of want to be able to ball it up in your hand and it stay together.
Right. And that's good soil structure. When you mess up that soil structure, you got some problems.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you overuse that tiller and you just beat it to death. You mess up soil structure, it becomes very loose, it doesn't have any consistency
and
to it.
And your nutrient retention is going to be terrible.
Your microorganisms are basically gone. Now, you can repair it. And I'm in the process of doing some of that, some plots I've got now. I'm trying to repair that damage that I have done to that soil over a period of time. So my strategy is I limit the use of tiller to once, twice a year, only when I'm preparing that seed bed. I do not use my tiller for cultivating my middles. I went back to the wheel hoe and some other things to cultivate because you're not messing up the tilth of that soil there. Also, I'm using a lot more cover crops. Cover crops is building my soils back up and get that soil back alive.
Yeah, so use a tiller. Don't use a tiller. You got a lot of weed seeds. Don't use it for cultivating. You just want to stay shallow. You don't want to disturb the feeder.
You want to use a disc. You want to use a cultivator tee. You want to use something that busts up that soil but does not damage it.
Mm-hmm. And don't use it immediately before you plant because you'll have some germination issues. Now let's flip that around and talk about when it is a good time to use one. And the first one, obviously, is if you're starting a new garden plot. You got a patch of grass in your backyard. Now, you can tarp that. There's some slow ways of doing this. You can tarp it. I've seen people put cardboard over it. But to really get that ground workable to plant in, you're going to need to break that ground with a tiller or a bottom plow or something.
Yeah, and a tiller is a lot more feasible for most people. Even if you don't have one, you can go rent one.
Right.
Got somebody you can borrow one from, a friend can come over and do it for you. They're easy to transport, and that's probably the best method if you're going to start a garden is to tillivate it.
Right. And in my experience of starting a new plot, what I would do is I would go in there because especially if you got grass there, it takes several tillings to kind of break that up and get it. So I'd say start a month or so before you plant the garden. Maybe do it once a week, and then it'd be in good shape. You can run the wheel hoe and manage it from there on out. Mm-hmm. Another good time to use it in the garden is especially if you got harder soils, is before planting root crops. So if you're planting something like carrots or potatoes, maybe even onions or sweet potatoes, something that's going to be more of a root crop down deeper in the soil, those things do better if they've got a little of a fluffier soil bed where they can penetrate.
Yeah, that'd be an ideal time there too to put your compost out there and make one pass, incorporate your compost, and then kind of get that soil mixed up good there. And that compost is going to help getting your soil compacted again. So what I would do is try to limit the amount of times I go over it, put my compost on there, till it in as I'm trying to prepare my seed bed too, and have it all done at one time.
Yeah, and with potatoes, I'll do this. I won't till the whole garden. I'll just till that lane where I'm going to plant my potatoes, leave everything else undisturbed. Yep. Another good use for a tiller is incorporating cover crops or what we call green manure. And we've did a video on this in the past showing the flail mower attachment. You can mow that cover crop down and then we'll go in and till it into the soil. You can't really plant. There's no small scale equipment that will plant in that heavy cover crop residue. So you got to incorporate the soil if you're going to come in there and plant
it. Well, it actually gets your microbes more active too. Now, I know everybody didn't have access to a flail mower, but you can take your lawnmower, go in there and do it.
Yeah.
Anytime you chew up that that cover crop, it helps it break down a lot quicker. You can get in there with your tiller and put it back in the soil. It's harder if you don't cut it up some way to get it back in the soil. So I will take my flail mower, my lawnmower, whatever, and get it chewed up, then till it back in.
And then finally, the one thing that I use a tiller for in the middle of the growing season is to kind of re-level after some healed crops. Something like corn, after I cut them stalks down, I will use a tiller to come in there because my corn will be healed up like this. Come in there and just make one pass and it'll level it out and chop all that stuff up and I'm ready to plant something else.
Mm-hmm.
So use a tiller when appropriate. And now we want to get into some different types that we've had experiences with over the years and talk about some different kinds.
So what we're not even going to go into the ones, the little, and I don't really mean to be negative about this, but we're not even going to talk about the little cheap ones you can go to the big box store and buy. The little dinky cheap ones, we're not even going to go there because there's too many of them, it's too complex. We're going to talk about good tillers today.
Good tillers.
So if you're like us, I would much rather invest into a good tool and have it for years than I have buy something that's going to last a couple of years that I got to replace where I got to work on all the time. It's also very important to me to buy a product that's supported well, where I can get parts from. If I have any problems, I can pick up the phone, call somebody, and find out what I need to do. So the three tillers we're going to talk about today is the Troy Built, and we're going to talk about the Grillo. We're going to talk about the BCS. Now, let's talk about the Troy-Bilt first. Troy-Bilt was the very first tiller manufactured here in the United States and has been here the longest. 1937 is when the Troy-Bilt was started manufacturing in Troy, New York. Been around a long time.
And now, as far as rear-tying tillers go, that was the standard.
That was the standard. So it's changed hands. Companies has, you know, evolved a little bit all the way up to 2001. In 2001, the Troy-Bilt tiller, as we know it, the good Troy-Bilt tiller, went bankrupt, and it was purchased by a company called MTD. MTD is known for their mass manufacturing of different outdoor equipment, and it's probably a lower quality. And we're going to stop at the 2001 when the good old Troy-Bilt tillers were around. Now, I bought one back in the 1990s, and you have it now, and you use it now, and it's been a good tool. Now, it's not fancy by no means. It's bare bones. It's tough as nails. Very little has been done to that tiller since the 1990s. I think I replaced the gas tank on it.
Yeah, it's what I call functional, but it's not very pretty. It doesn't have the differential when you turn. I don't like to use it a lot because it can make a mess. You know, when you turn it, it's going to tear up some ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to use. I'll usually walk beside it and just use one hand. It steers well. The turning of it is... it's heavy.
Yeah, it's got plenty of metal in it. No bells and whistles. This is straight workhorse.
Yeah, and ours is, as it's aged over the years, you just crank it up, put it in low or high, and go. I think there's some handle shifting that could be done.
Yeah, they are.
That's all kind of froze up, and I use it bare bones just as a tiller, nothing fancier than that.
Yeah, and you can still buy parts for them. You have to get online and do a little research. So if you can find one of these old tillers that's in good shape and you're in the market for one, that's definitely a good option for
them. Pre-2001.
Pre-2001.
And the horse is the model we have. They have a smaller one, but the horse is the most popular one everybody's got. So if you can find one of those on Craigslist, $1,000, $1,500, a good find if it's running.
Yeah, been took care of, been under the shelter. So let's move on to the more modern, really good tillers on the market out there, and that would be Grillo and BCS. Both these are Italian-made tillers. There's a company called Earth Tools out of Kentucky. that is a dealer for both of them. And there's a guy out of Tennessee, Richard Daly. Richard Daly is a dealer for both of them, the BCS and the Grillo. The Grillo is not as much bells and whistles as the BCS. The BCS is probably the top dog out there right now as far as tillers. It has all kind of implements for it. They well built, and they do really good. They're kind of on the expensive side.
Just to be clear, a lot of times you'll see these things referred to as walk behind tractors. And the reason they call them that is because you can change the implements.
Right.
That Troy built tiller, it's a tiller.
It's a tiller.
But these walk behind tractors, you can change the different implements and do different things with them.
Yeah, we got a flail mower for our BCS. So we have a BCS and a Grillo that we use here at the office and at the demonstration garden in Moultrie, Sunbelt Expo. You got the Troy build at your house that you use in your garden. So the BCS that we have three or four different implements for it. Primarily use it for the tiller. I do use the flail mower some. And then we also have a smaller Grillo. The Grillo just has a tiller attachment on there. The Grillo doesn't have as many bells and whistles, and it costs a little less than the BCS does. And both of them are fine pieces of equipment. So you have to talk to your dealer, find out exactly what your use is for one and which one suits you the best. Both of them, I think, would do well. Richard Daly and Joel at Earth Tools, both of them support this product really well. Good people to work with. And if you have any problems, you can be assured that they're going to be able to help you fix those problems.
And both of those, the Grillo and the BCS, they turn a lot easier than the old Troy built. They ain't gonna make near much of a mess. They also can run a little faster. That old Troy built's pretty slow because you got to run it in low gear, and these can run a little faster. You got a little more, like you said, bells and whistles as far as adjusting the handles.
And they run smoother. They're easier to run. So the small Grillo that I got, I find myself a lot of times getting a hold of it because it's light, it maneuvers well, it's easy to handle. So if you got if your wife likes to garden and she thinks she wants to run the tiller some, this is probably the one to get. Now I have the bigger, I forgot the model number I got, but I have the bigger BCS, and that thing's a beast. I wouldn't recommend somebody of small stature trying to run it. It can be kind of tough to turn around there at the ends, and it can be kind of heavy to handle.
You really need some longer rows for that one, more of like a 100-foot road kind of set up. You don't want to be turning that around too much.
Yeah. For just a tiller, I really like my small Grillo.
Yeah. And the BCS, you got the flail mower attachment, which, like I said earlier, we've shown the video, works awesome. The flail mower, unlike a lawnmower that's going to cut something and spray it to the left or the right, the flail mower keeps everything in place. You've got the Power Harrow, which I really like, which is a little lighter cultivation than the tiller, and it's got a roller on the back that compacts that seed bed, makes it good and nice for planting.
Yep.
They've even got the, I don't know what they call them, but it's like a big furrower that you can make beds with.
Rotary plow, please.
Rotary plow.
Yeah. So if you're into raised beds, this thing works good. It wasn't for me, so I didn't get one of them, but if you like to plant on a large bed, these things do a good job.
I think they even make, for our friends up north, they even make snow plow for it.
Hay balers,
all kind of different attachments for those. So a lot of versatility with those.
Yep. And we're going to show up a link here of Earth Tools and then Daly's, their link to their website. So if you are interested, you may want to go take a look around.
That's right. So a couple different options there in price range. You got your older Troy builds, which it's going to be more affordable. Then your nicer stuff with the newer ones. Like you said earlier, I'd stay away from those front-tine tillers. Those things will beat you to death.
Yeah.
They're cheaper, but they're cheaper for a reason.
Yeah. Buy you something that's going to make you an investment for you that's going to last you for a lifetime. That's what we try to do.
Yeah. Now, some of our customers, I guess, got a larger plot of land, will use those King cutters on the back of their tractor.
Mm-hmm.
Those can make a mess if you don't have plenty of room. So
yeah,
that's definitely for a larger acre-sized plot or so.
Same principles apply to that, though. Do not overuse it.
Right, because you're going to end up with just powder and lose your tilth there.
Yep.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that talk there on tillers. Got some good information there. Let's get into our questions. And as always, put your questions in the comments. If we answer one of your questions during the show, send us your address to customserve@hosstools.com and we'll send you one of these fancy koozies.
Highly coveted koozies.
Mm-hmm. Top quality here. Coldest drink you ever had.
Yep.
Put one of those koozies on it. All right, so our first question is from Trivet30. And he says he bought our garden planter, which we showed last week, our little slide chart that tells you when to plant. Bought it last spring, and he's looking at the fall planting side and looking at some things like carrots and broccoli, and it says to protect from heat. And he was wondering what that actually meant.
Yeah. Well, some of the things that do not do well after they come up in the severe heat that we have here in South Georgia. Carrots is one of them, and you're the carrot expert here.
Yeah, I actually wait till, because I don't really incorporate any shade cloth or anything. I wait till middle of October to plant my carrots.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, up north, you can probably do a little earlier, but you got to wait till that soil temp cools down a little bit for carrots. Otherwise, you won't get very good germination. For broccoli, you can get broccoli to germinate and come up and make leaves in the heat, but if it's too hot, it's going to get seedy in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Some of the cold crops, we're in zone 8 down here. So some of the cold crops I just do not grow in August unless we have to grow them for our demonstration garden. We have to do some things there that's outdoor there. But in my home garden, I just do not try to grow some of the cold crops in August. I'll wait till September to plant those. Yeah. The heat's just too much.
Now, if you have access to the shade cloth and have time to put it on and take it off, you can push the limits a little bit. But we don't use the shade cloth. We usually just kind of wait to a better time. And this spring, I tried to get a second crop of broccoli in, and it turned hot quick. It was cool nights and got hot all of a sudden, and it bolted all my broccoli.
Yeah.
And once those broccoli heads get seedy, they're chicken food, basically.
Right.
Get your timing right in there. If you have to use shade cloth, that's a good option. And then our last question here is from Louis Guerrero, and he's talking about spraying corn, and he wants to know, do we spray just the ears or the whole plant?
You can do both. I went in there and just sprayed the silken on the ears before, but what I prefer to do is spray over the top tassel when they're tasseling out and just kind of let it float down. If I got any worms eating on the top of the leaves up there, I can get them too. So that's my preferred method. It can be tough sometimes on some of these tall varieties. Got some Jimmy Red out there right now that's getting pretty tall, and I'm gonna have to borrow a mist sprayer to get over the top. So if I can't spray over the top, I go in there and spray just the top of the silks where the corn is silk, and I spray that. Like I said, my preferred method is to go over the top with a good volume spray so that it comes down and I get really good coverage.
And especially with any kind of all natural organic pesticides, fungicides, besides spraying early and often, coverage is key. And that squash, yep, I was talking about earlier that I've been spraying frequently, they say you want to spray it, cover it until it starts dripping. You, yep, don't want it dripping off the plant.
Well, you're wasting when you start dripping. With natural and organic pest control solution, excuse me, the two main things there is timing and coverage.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do those two things, you're going to get poor control.
Yeah, so with this stuff, there's really no risk in burning the plants a whole lot, and you want to make sure you cover the entire plant from leaf down to where it connects with the soil. So mm-hmm. I'd say spray the whole thing.
If you have capability to spray the whole thing, that's definitely what I would do. I think you'll get better control that way.
All right, so thank y'all for the questions, and hope y'all enjoyed the show this week. Next week, on next week's show, we're going to talk a little bit about our demonstration garden at the Hall Sustainable Living Center, which, yep, is part of the Sunbelt Expo. Big demo garden, half acre?
Close to it.
That we do every year, kind of showcase our products, some of our growing strategies. Really, really good event, and we're going to talk about that, and hope you join us next week for that.
All right, have a good one.
See you then.